Good afternoon and welcome to the lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. It is Wednesday, the 4th of June, 2024. And this is program number 1385 of the lunchroom. I'm your host, Calix George Jr. Now, of course, in addition to Radio 101.1 FM, you can also get us at our website. It is rcistlucia.com. And we are streaming live on Facebook. You just have to search for the official page of Radio Caribbean International. And please be sure to like and share that link with your friends and family. Of course, in a little bit, we'll be taking in our Wednesday special on Republic Bank, Eastern Caribbean Limited. And of course, that is Republic Corner. We'll be taking in a bit more on the matter of the Power to Make a Difference campaign of Republic Bank. That's coming up in just a bit. But first, we want to look back in time to some of the happenings around the world on this day in history. And in the year 1760, it was known as the Great Upheaval. New England planters arrived in Nova Scotia in Canada to claim land taken from the Acadians. 1940, on this day, was dubbed as the Miracle of Dunkirk. The British completed the evacuation of 338,226 Allied troops from France via a flotilla of over 800 vessels, including Royal Navy destroyers, merchant marine boats, fishing boats, pleasure crafts, and even lifeboats were engaged in that effort. In the year 1989, Eastern Europe's first partially free elections in 40 years are held in Poland. And that is Solidarity Party coming into power in that election there. And, of course, Tiananmen Square, we've had that a couple of days now in our history of the day. The Tiananmen Square massacre, so Chinese troops clearing the square of student protests. And that placed an official death toll at somewhere around 1,000 individuals. And in 2023, on this day, Ukrainian counteroffensive began during the Ukraine-Russia conflict with increased fighting in the east and south of the country. Of course, today we want to send out some birthday greetings to some people as well. And first, we want to say happy birthday to Genevieve Fitz. Happy, happy birthday to you. Hope you're having a wonderful birthday celebration. Also want to send out some birthday greetings to Mr. Francis Springer. Happy, happy, happy birthday to you, sir. And we do hope that you're having a wonderful day. We now move across to our dish of the day. The daily dish is brought to you the kind compliments of our good friends at Tiles Plus.
One test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need tests for your balcony. Come down to Tiles Plus. Satisfaction guarantee. Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus, Tiles Plus. Big tests with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A plus. Did all kind of tests. Come down to Tiles Plus. We also got glassware and vanity. Box, doors, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best tests on island. Trust me. We are located Lance Road in Castries, Bosses, you Grozy Lakes, and Slack Street in Dufort. Telephone number 453-7939. Tiles Plus.
Serving now, the Daily Dish.
And welcome back to our program here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Now, of course, a couple months back on the April the 2nd, we were all talking about the introduction of what was dubbed by President Donald Trump as Liberation Day. And it was the day of the tariffs where we remember Mr. Trump coming out into the onto the lawn of the White House with these large boards showing a schedule of what were deemed reciprocal tariffs. Of course, it turned out to be nothing much of reciprocity. But an attempt to rebalance America's trade deficit with the rest of the world, even, however, in instances where the United States enjoyed a positive trade deficit, those countries were still slapped with a 10% tariff. Now, of course, we've seen some major changes in that regard, and it would appear that most countries have, in fact, been placed under this 10% tariff situation. Of course, we then, of course, also saw a battle out with respect to the situation with China and the United States of America. Of course, China being the world's factory, the world's largest manufacturer, and the United States then went into an all-out escalation of tariffs over China when they, in fact, decided to retaliate with their own like tariffs as well. And of course, we saw the figures going into the hundreds of percent in that regard. Of course, it seems that things have sort of quietened down now somewhat with respect to that, and we've seen some pauses, which may in fact really be continued beyond the 90-day deadlines that have been set. But the Trump administration has also taken aim at other areas which they deem to be leakages of the American economy. Now, of course, what we know is that quite often people encourage investment. Of course, here in St. Lucia, we boast quite often about foreign direct investment. And, you know, you've heard leaders come and suggest certain amounts over the years. This is, we're going to expect $1 billion in terms of investment coming from this project or that project. And the whole idea is that money is flowing in to the country, and that redounds to economic growth and wealth accumulation. Of course, there is that reverse flow of money as well. And that is, of course, sometimes money is repatriated. And that tends to be where countries end up losing funds, of course. So when a company comes in, a foreign company, they may want to make an investment and they make profits, and they sometimes repatriate those funds. And of course, the that also happens with respect to remittances, right? Where individuals are working in a country and those funds are accumulated through incomes by these individuals, and they send some money back home to friends and family. And that, of course, has a whole ecosystem of businesses that do those money transfers and allow individuals to be able to do such. However, there is, in fact, a proposal, a bill in place right now that is looking to introduce a new tax on remittances of funds leaving the United States for other countries. And I think a 3.5% levy is being proposed there. And of course, the implications are, this is already a very highly taxed area. In fact, these companies who do the transfer of funds are already paying taxes. And then this new introduction of a remittance tax is being seen to be somewhat development of the poor countries in the world, especially, of course, Africa, where these countries depend significantly on those flow of funds heading to households in those countries. And of course, in some instances, remittances are as high as a quarter of their gross national income for some African countries. So certainly a taxation on remittances out of the United States of America, which has very large diasporas that are sending it out, that certainly is something that's going to have a negative impact on the flow of remittances, of course, and as well the amount of money that's actually reaching the hands of those individuals out there who are depending on them. Now, of course, it's 1:15, so that's our dish of the day. And when we come back, we're going to take in our Republic Corner.
This has been The Daily Dish.
Yeah. test for your home, I see. Bathroom, kitchen, pantry. Need test for your balcony. Come down to Test Plus, satisfaction guarantee. Test Plus, Test Plus, Test Plus. Big test with unbeatable cost. Customer service, A+, did all kind of tests. Come down to Test Plus. We also got gasoline and vanity. Boss, boss, you'll see. Come down, don't mind nobody. We got the best test on island. Trust me. We are located Land Street in Castries, Bosses, Jou Grozy Lane, and Slack Street in Viewfort. Telephone number 453-7939. Test Plus.
And welcome back to the lunchroom here at Radio Caribbean International. And we are back with another edition of Republic Corner. And it is, for this week, we're going to continue our focus on the corporate social responsibility of Republic Bank through its Power to Make a Difference program. Now, June the 10th is the deadline, and it's around the corner, and it is, in fact, the opportunity and time for NGOs, non-governmental organizations, civil society, private sector organizations to finalize their submissions through this Republic Bank Power to Make a Difference program. And today, as with last week, we were speaking with Ronisha Emmanuel. She is a marketing specialist with Republic Bank EC Limited. And we're going to be speaking about what makes a strong proposal, getting into some of the details as to really what Republic Bank would like to see within that proposal and how to, in fact, improve on your chances to make a successful bid for these grants which are being provided through this Power to Make a Difference campaign. And I do believe we already have on air with us online, Miss Ronisha Emmanuel. Ronisha, how are you doing today?
Hi, I'm great. Thanks for asking. Hope you are too.
I am. Thank you very much. And thanks for rejoining us again for the second week in a row to speak on the whole Power to Make a Difference program being undertaken by Republic Bank right here in the Eastern Caribbean, right here in St. Lucia.
So, definitely.
Let's talk about that important, because we spoke about it last week, of course, and encouraging individuals to note that the deadline has, in fact, been extended. Today is the 4th of June, so there's still some more time left in fact, make that submission. But, of course, individuals will be wondering, you know, what should I really be putting into this kind of proposal? And they may be wondering, how is this Power to Make a Difference initiative, is it any different at all from other forms of corporate sponsorship?
It is definitely different. For PMAD, it is not just a sponsorship. It is Republic Bank's flagship corporate social responsibility program. And with that, we have a strategic and long-term focus on building sustainable communities. As well as forging community, we're very big on community. And unlike your typical sponsorship out there that might just support one-off events, PMAD is all about backing initiatives that create real, lasting, and social impact. Everything we support connects back to one or more of our four key pillars. I would have mentioned that last week. By any chance, do you remember any of them?
Well, I know definitely one of them was about learning, and we also had one about caring.
Correct. So that is our core. You know, the power to care, the power to help, the power to succeed, and the power to learn. Mm-hmm. So any project that we fund under PMAD, it is purpose-driven and requires a detailed proposal that falls under one of those four core pillars. And like you rightfully mentioned, the deadline was May 27th, but we pushed it to June 10th to ensure that the proposals we are receiving are very thorough and it speaks to the true nature of the projects, of the initiatives, so we can get a better understanding of what you're trying to execute and be able to assist. So June 10th is actually next week, Tuesday, so you don't have a lot of time.
Right. Is there a set form that has to be filled out in this process?
Yes, the form is available on the website. When you go to the tab, it has the brief instructions and it has the form for you to fill out right there.
Okay, wonderful. So, in fact, you are going to be putting it through a structured form in terms of your submission for the support through Power to Make a Difference. Now, tell us tell us a bit about the benefits of the program apart from just the financing.
I'm glad you asked about that. While funding is definitely an important part of PMAD, the program offers so much more than just financial support. Being selected under the PMAD banner brings a level of credibility as well as public recognition that can really elevate an organization, you know. Mm-hmm. It often opens doors to new partnerships and even additional sources of funding. And we have in some cases where our partners meet each other and they end up collaborating and building better bonds and bridges. Mm. So what's also great is that Republic Bank doesn't just write a check and walk away. We stay engaged with our grantees. We are truly committed to helping them grow and strengthen their capacity over time. PMAD is really about supporting organizations in a way that helps them not only bring their ideas to life, but also make a long-lasting impact in their communities and keeping that idea and vision going. And also, in quite a few cases, speaking more on capacity, we're looking, when we think about support, we oftentimes offer PR and marketing support for our partners.
Okay.
Because we want you to have success, we want you to succeed, so we will use our internal resources, the entire marketing department, you know, will chip in to ensure that we help you plan your events or capture content for certain initiatives within your project that you may be working on. So it's a full circle moment,
right,
being a grantee for PMAD.
And so I suppose this is definitely a confidence booster for any new entrants into the civil society space, into the NGO space, because you sometimes do have new organizations that may want to come in. Somebody might just have a very good idea and they're thinking, wow, boy, should I really be able to get through with a Republic Bank, an institution, like a financial institution like this, and maybe a little bit nervous about actually taking that plunge.
And you're
actually saying that there is a level of hand-holding there. And I mean, absolutely. I remember last week you mentioned Obtronics, which was a pretty new entity. And of course, they're pushing this shared approach as well in terms of the innovation hub that they're dealing with. So definitely you're not averse to working and collaborating with new NGOs, new kids on the block.
On the contrary, we welcome them with open arms. So if you're there listening right now and you have a really good idea to help your community, but you aren't quite sure how to navigate it, still apply. If it's a really solid idea that fits under our pillars, we would be more than happy to work with you if you are selected.
Wonderful. So can organizations that have already received funding in the past through this program, Power to Make a Difference, can they reapply? Is that an option?
Well, I think you know the answer to this question already.
For those of you listening who don't,
organizations that have previously received PMAD funding are absolutely welcome to apply again, especially if they're building on a successful project or expanding the reach of that project. And, you know, they need continuous funds and financing for that, as well as support. We're there for that. That said, even returning applicants need to make sure that their new proposal clearly aligns with PMAD's mission and shows continued relevance and potential for impact.
Wonderful. That's, of course, good to know. And we did definitely discuss that and the importance of continuity in the projects and actually developing multi-year projects as well, where they are, in fact, very much necessary. Now, does Power to Make a Difference support projects in across all sectors? And I think you may have already kind of given us a sense about that, but are there restrictions or limitations regarding the sectors that you actually support?
Well, PMAD is open to a wide range of sectors, and that includes education, environment, health, youth development, social services. And another way we go a step further is because we cater to industries that others may not. particularly the orange economy, that is the side that speaks to creativity, culture and entertainment, you know, carnival, jazz, and quite a few others. As long as a project has a clear social impact, they too can apply. Because we have such an impactful model in place, PMA does not fund for-profit or purely commercial ventures. So if you have an idea and it is solely for you to make money, make a profit, we would not lean towards projects of that nature. The focus is really on inclusion, community benefit, as well as making a meaningful difference.
Okay, wonderful. So, of course, it's not a situation where you're going to be giving an injection of funds for somebody to go out there and raise capital for a business. This is really supposed to be geared towards community involvement, community interventions that really help society. So, of course, and that's generally expected of most of these types of programs. Now, where can interested groups actually get more information in the last minute? I mean, it's only about 6 days to go, sorry. So where can they actually get more information on the power to make a difference?
All right. So more information can be found on our website. That's www.republicbankstlucia.com/PMAD. So you would go there and you would find all the details about PMAD, including the required supporting documents, as well as the application form we mentioned earlier. Yeah. You can also email us at rbecpmad@rfhl.com. That's rbecpmad@rfhl.com. Or you can visit one of our branches that is closest to you and tell them, hey, you're interested in PMAD, and they will definitely be able to give you some feedback and some guidance.
Wonderful. How's it been going, though, in terms of the submissions thus far and over the years? Give us a sense, maybe, in terms of, I don't know if you have any data on it, how many submissions do you normally get, and, you know, how difficult is it to get through?
It is very easy to submit an application. The hard part is choosing, because we have so many amazing projects, not only in St. Lucia, but across the Eastern Caribbean, because as you know, we are a regional bank, right? After our last interview, we actually saw an uptick of applicants. So we're really happy for that. And on average, we would have about 25-30 partners per cycle, and of course some of them would be new as well as returning partners.
Right. And of course, you still encourage, I mean, as much as I know you're looking to encourage all participants, including new entrants, but you have a lot of very traditional players within the civil society space, sometimes religious organizations, clubs, you know, charitable groups. Those are all welcome as well, of course, to submit applications.
Yes, definitely. Off the top of my head, Rotary, we work with Rotary across several territories, actually, not just here in St. Lucia. So we are accustomed to the diverse nature of non-governmental organizations and civil societies out there.
Wonderful. I think we've covered everything in the amount of time that we have. I think we've done a pretty good job of it. And hopefully there are a lot of people out there who are still listening and who have said, hey, you know what? I really need to get onto that website and actually try to submit something as quickly as possible. I want to make a difference. I've got a pretty good idea. And you know what? Let me give it a shot. So thanks so very much, of course, Ronisha, as always, for sharing
with us.
Thank you for having me. I really, really hope that we can see this year a bumper number of applications. I don't want to put too much pressure on Republic Bank, but I mean, you're doing wonderful work, and I really hope that we can see even more of that happen in 2025. And of course, the deadline for submissions, June the 10th. So you only have about 6 days to go.
Without counting today and without counting June 10th, you only have 5 days remaining,
Oh, no. Okay. Well, I was actually counting today still. But and is there a specific time, June 10th at 11 o'clock, 11:59 or something?
Ah, you're getting technical with it now.
Some people want to go right down to the 11th hour.
So all your submissions are received by, let's say, 5 p.m. as a safe time, you know. Because, okay, you know, sometimes the system updates after the work day. You don't want yours to fall through the cracks.
Okay, so, yeah. So
5 p.m. Let's use that as a safe parameter.
On June the 10th, try to keep it within business hours. Nobody's going to be up at 11:59 waiting on the submission. Thanks so much for pointing that one out. Of course, for us, for Ronisha. And as always, it's been great to have you on. Any parting words from you?
Apply now.
Okay. Yes, I think that's...
Find your nearest branch. If you are unsure about anything, tell them to call the marketing department. We will assist you. Just apply now. We're ready to help you make a difference.
Fantastic. And we really do hope that... individuals are out there. There's a lot of need. We have no doubt about it. And there's an opportunity for individuals who are, especially those who are passionate about service, to in fact get that help that you require. So quite often financing is a big challenge, but you're getting more than financing. You're getting a willing partner with Republic Bank Eastern Caribbean Limited. So we do hope that you can take up that opportunity to make a difference. That deadline, 5 p.m. on June the 10th. You only have about 5 days to go, so get onto that website, Republic Bank EC Limited, and of course call in to do that. Thank you so very much, Ronisha, and of course thanks to all our listeners out there for joining us for Republic Corner. And it's been a pleasure, Ronisha. But of course, next week, I think we're back to our regular programming.
Back to the regular schedule.
You're right. And we're going to be taking up more on the Pick Your Rate campaign and other initiatives of Republic Bank. So, of course, until then, remember that to have us locked on every Wednesday here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Of course, make a difference out there. We do hope that you're going to take it up, the power to make a difference. There is lots of opportunity there for you as a civil society organization. So have a good one. Take care, Ronisha, and the very best. And of course, to all our listeners, thank you. And we'll be back in just a bit as we take in our weather report.
Sort the house out for the best price and the latest style. Take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. We got the time to make you say.
Visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Castries, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewfort Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tan and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
This is Radio Caribbean International. It's now time for the weather news.
Also, the 1.1 is now time for your weather report as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath. The forecast for St. Lucia Valley for the next 24 hours, the winds will be blowing from the east near 18 miles per hour or 30 kilometers per hour. The weather for sky is becoming cloudy at times with a few scattered showers. Forecast for the Los Angeles, fair skies becoming cloudy at times with some scattered light to moderate showers. And the tropical weather outlook, the Atlantic high pressure system will continue to generate moderate easterly winds across the Eastern Caribbean region during the next few days. Weak, unstable conditions over the region will cause occasional cloudiness and with light to moderate showers over the Los Angeles during the forecast period. Also, a tropical wave located over the eastern tropical Atlantic is moving westward near 12 miles per hour or 19 kilometers per hour. Tropical cyclone formation is not expected over the tropical Atlantic over the next 7 days. And this was the weather forecast as of 12 noon today, presented by Island Style Talent Bath.
This has been RCI's weather news. For more information, call the weather hotline at 454-3452. RCI 101 number 1.
Island Style. We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say, yeah. We'll have to make the right choice. Island Style. Whoa. We got the time that will make you happy. Island Style. Oh, yeah. We make your dream come alive in Island Style.
We have tiles and tin sets, pieces and ground. Everything you need is on the house out. For the best price and the latest style, take a little drive down to Island Style Car.
We got the time to make you go. Oh. We got the time to make you say,
visit us at our showrooms in Belarusa, Rodney Bay, on the John Crompton Highway, Cass Street, and behind Ruby's Gas Station on the Library Viewport Highway. Or call us on 450-452 or 453-TILE. Island Style, Tile and Bath. When you think tile, think Island Style.
And welcome back to our program here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. And, of course, we were just speaking with Republic Bank on their Power to Make a Difference campaign. And, of course, we do hope that individuals out there in civil society take up this opportunity to be able to get some funds and to be able to actually get out into the community and to see a difference being made around St. Lucia. So we hope that goes very well. Now, as I promised, we do have to take in that article by Mr. Raheem Augustine Joseph, as we had spoken about it a couple of times thus far. And I think it's, in fact, need time to try to get through with it in its entirety. And, of course, just to remind you, it's an article on the matter of our constitution, how not just our constitution, but how we structure our government. And, of course, in particular, looking at our parliamentary system. And it's entitled, As I See It, St. Lucia Needs a More Activist and Transparent Parliament. And it was published in the St. Lucia Times on May the 31st. 2025. And it reads as follows. There is a growing, if quiet, demand for reforming St. Lucia's parliament to strengthen its role in holding the government accountable. Yet, true checks and balances remain elusive under our current system, where those in power are also tasked with scrutinizing themselves, which is akin to the police policing the police. This inherent conflict undermines public trust and perpetuates a culture of opacity where decisions are made without meaningful challenge. As Shakespeare noted in Julius Caesar, quote, the eye cannot see itself, end quote. The only real check comes every 5 years at the ballot box. But even without abandoning the Westminster model, as proposed and rejected in the 2011 Constitutional Reform Report, there are still meaningful reforms that could enhance accountability, transparency, and good governance. The stagnation of parliamentary oversight is not just a procedural failure. It is a democratic deficit that leaves citizens without recourse between elections. The first step of electoral reform. The most urgent change should be replacing the first-past-the-post system with proportional representation. The current model distorts the national will, favoring strong governments while marginalizing opposition and minority voices, evident in 1997 and today. Under First Past the Post, a party with a minority of votes can secure a supermajority of seats, rendering parliament a mere extension of executive dominance rather than a deliberative body. Tradition and political self-interest have long overridden fairness, but this must change. A proportional system would not only reflect the electorate's true preferences, but also incentivize coalition building and consensus governance, reducing the winner-takes-all polarization that stifles dissent. Strengthening parliamentary oversight. Prime Minister's questions, PMQs, adopted structured PMQs, as in the UK, would ensure direct, regular scrutiny of the Prime Minister by opposition and backbench MPs. This would curb evasion through friendly media and force transparency on key national issues. Imagine monthly PMQs where the Prime Minister must defend controversial policies under direct, unscripted questioning. Such a forum would elevate public discourse and deter unilateral decision-making. Given the opposition's structural weakness under our electoral system, civil society representatives could also be included in these sessions, ensuring broader societal participation. Scrutiny of public servants. Parliament should have the power to question senior public servants whose decisions often impact citizens without sufficient accountability. The outcry has been that at times public servants have power without responsibility, such that their decision-making affects a wide cross-section of the population without any safeguards, bar difficult disciplinary processes to enforce accountability before the public service commissions. The goal isn't to embarrass, but to illuminate their work for public and parliamentary review. Accountability hearings would also professionalize the civil service, as officials would know their decisions are subject to scrutiny. Limiting executive appointments. The Prime Minister's unchecked power to appoint key officials must be curtailed. U.S. Senate-style confirmation hearings, though imperfect, could ensure appointees' qualifications and philosophies are publicly examined, shifting focus from personalities to institutional processes. For example, the appointment of a controversial police commissioner or director of audit should require parliamentary approval, with hearings aired live. Our politics must, over time, resile from being obsessed with personalities and include processes and institutions such that the appointees' work ethic, underlying philosophies, and plans are on display for critical scrutiny. Modernizing Parliament's tools. Technology is woefully underutilized. While live broadcasts of parliamentary sessions exist, basic resources like a functioning website with bills, committee reports, and Hansard records are missing. How can citizens engage with laws being debated if they can't access draft legislation? How can journalists fact-check ministerial claims without archived debates? Transparency shouldn't be a privilege for academics, but a right for all citizens. A digitized parliament would also enable e-petitions, virtual public hearings, and real-time feedback mechanisms, bridging the gap between representatives and constituents. Low-hanging fruits. Standing Orders, Section 14. This allows MPs to question ministers on their portfolios. The opposition should use this instead of relying on weekly public briefings, even if concern about the speaker persists. If the speaker consistently blocks valid inquiries, public pressure, not resignation, should force reform. Public consultations. The legislative body must include genuine public input with clear definitions, as in Guyana's constitution, ensuring stakeholders have time and opportunity to contribute. But people must also utilize some of the powers in the standing orders, such as petitioning Parliament on matters of national interest. Reviving the Public Accounts Committee. The PAC, or the Public Accounts Committee, meant to audit government spending, has been dormant. Consider this. When was the last time a ministry's wasteful expenditure was exposed and rectified through PAC hearings? Small parliaments and government majorities hinder its effectiveness, but solutions exist. Expanding membership to include civil society or opposition senators could restore its role. In conclusion, reforming parliament isn't an all-or-nothing endeavor. Incremental changes such as electoral reform, stronger oversight, and modern transparency measures can significantly improve governance. The cost of inaction is a parliament that rubber stamps rather than challenges, and a public increasingly disillusioned with democracy itself. As our democracy matures, we must act to ensure Parliament fulfills its duty, not as a rubber stamp, but as a true check on power. The need for loud, persistent reform is now. And that's an article that was published in the St. Lucia Times by Mr. Rahim Augustine Joseph. And he's a 24-year-old St. Lucian pursuing his Bachelor's of Law at UEC. Cavill, I think, well, he had pursued his Bachelor's of Law at UE Cavill after earning a first-class honours in political science. And he's also the current Commonwealth Caribbean Rhodes Scholar and a former UE valedictorian. And he is dedicated to using law and politics to transform St. Lucia and the wider Caribbean. And certainly, in my opinion, a very excellent article which touches on a lot of the matters, not just matters of reforming the Constitution, as he rightfully pointed out, but even steps that could be taken at an administrative level without the need for changing any laws that could, in fact, actually occur. And a good example that he's pointing out is the importance of simply ensuring that the information of the parliament is actually made available online, that people should be able to have a website where they can actually go to and pull off, you know, submissions of and Hansard. And of course, in today's world, you don't even necessarily even need Hansard if they are, in fact, just well-documented video recordings as well, which are uploaded onto websites. Not saying not to have Hansard, not to have the written word, but you can also utilize the technology as it is available, and ensuring that you have, well, reports of committees. That, of course, if committees function, then that is would be there. And the matter of ensuring that all bills are brought forward. And it is part of the challenge that we have, too, in terms of the process of bringing forward legislation. Thankfully, now we have seen the practice of not rushing through legislation in one sitting. We used to see that quite a bit in the past, and you'd find that an individual would only find out about a legislation that's coming up on the day, and in fact, the system that is in place is, in fact, to be able to ensure that you should have a first reading of the bill before the bill is in fact debated at the point of second reading. But even with that, there is also a very important, there are other steps within the legislative process that are certainly important. And even in the process of legislative drafting, that is that should be a process based within consultation, right? To be able to set out legislation. And that's a really important aspect, to be able to have good levels of consultation all throughout the process. And even when, at the point when there is now a draft, right, before you even get to the point of having a draft bill, you would normally have what is known as a white paper and a green paper, different levels of consultation so that people can actually know what's in the proposed legislation before it actually becomes a bill and before it's actually brought before Parliament. And that is really important as well in terms of processes. And it should not really just be about the matter of legislation, but even, you know, other matters of government policy. That too, it certainly requires extensive consultative process. Very, very important indeed. Let's take in a call at this time, and we head to the phone lines for that. Good afternoon, and welcome to the lunchroom. What's on your plate today?
Yes, good afternoon. In reference to your discussion about, you know, people, the public commenting on draft legislation, I noticed for the Electricity Act and the Electricity Regulations, it was put out on social media for the public to comment, which is a good. So I would like to see a similar thing happen, let's say, for bills like the Noise Pollution Bill. The draft noise pollution bill, because it seems it's very difficult to actually access that particular bill for the public to comment on.
Okay, I personally have not seen it either, so I wasn't even sure where that is at. But I mean, the point that is being made is in this article is exactly that there really should be a repository available through which people can just easily, you know, without necessarily having to say, you're calling the parliamentary office or calling up the clerk of parliament to see whether you could get a copy of a proposed legislation. You should be able to just go online and, in fact, search and get see what's there. Because sometimes you may not even know what's in the pipeline, so to speak.
Exactly.
You know, and to say, okay, oh, wow, I didn't know that there's going to be a noise pollution order coming up soon, and this is going to be debated, and you could see maybe where in the timeline it's likely to become brought to Parliament. So you have an idea, you know, and you can plan and provide comment. And I think the other point, too, that is important, too, sometimes people are not really given enough time to be able to actually provide their comments. Sometimes the window for consultation is very short. I know it's a balancing act because you have to balance, you know, the reality that you need the legislation, but at the same time, you want to ensure that there is, in fact, input into the legislation. So that is something that definitely government has to see how it can balance in terms of consultation.
Yeah.
Yep. Thanks very much for that point, caller. Have a good one. The matter of consultation is actually something I believe is in need of legislating in St. Lucia. Now, in some instances, we have it enshrined within some provisions that for example, the selection of the police commissioner or the director of order, I think there has to be, the prime minister has to consult with the leader of the opposition, but nobody else really on such appointments. So certainly the matter of consultation needs to be broadened within our public sphere. Let's go to the phone lines to take in another call at this time. Good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchroom. And what's on your plate today?
Good afternoon, colleagues. Yeah, good. Yeah, you see, all right?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
That was a good piece, yeah?
Very, very good. Very poignant. Very timely. Very important, I think.
Yes, yes, yes. But, you know, even within the, you know, I mean, the whole idea of proportional representation.
Yes.
That has been recommended over the years in terms of constitutional review.
It has been to some degree, but I'm not sure that it was actually even recommended within the Constitution Reform Commission report. Okay. No.
But how is that working? How is that working in Guyana?
Well, good question. Good question. I don't know that in the case of Guyana, it's too.
It empowers people more. I don't know because you find that race thing.
Yeah. Exactly. I believe you. In my ideal system, I would prefer to see a bit of a hybrid, in that you have maybe some people elected by proportional representation and maybe some elected through a first past the post in terms of a geographic spread. I think you can get a good mix that way, and also ensure that if you do have parties, you won't end up in a situation where, as we've seen across the Caribbean, in the case of Barbados, in Grenada, in other places, you know, one party takes all the seats, but you actually do have maybe 30-40% of the population actually went out and voted for the opposition. Yes, exactly.
Anyhow, colleagues, but what interests me more is the part of the piece that you spoke to, given the fact that, all right, this is he threw that out and then he went to, even within the context of parliamentary democracy, as is practiced in Westminster style,
mm-hmm.
our style,
mm-hmm.
that there are so many interventions, things that could be done to even make it more, you know, consultative and transparent and so on.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, a lot of these things are actually in there, you know, entrenched already. You know. But the thing with that, Calix, is, you know, and I'm speaking from a point of view that I've been in this sort of situation where you talk about the need for consultation and the thorough consultation,
mm-hmm.
you know, where you try and meet everybody, most people as possible, but then again, is who is interested.
You know, I was about to...
And what I was saying yes. is that the only time we would get a real audience is if we try and we meet it for a captive audience, like schools, you know? You want to tell the children they must come and listen.
Right.
You know why? You know, because there's this thing going on.
They have no choice. They have to be there.
They have no choice. But in the issue, in the instances where you call us and you invite parliamentary members, you wouldn't even see representatives of the current administration.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And those of our opposition.
Mm-hmm.
These things just have these people just, you know, the way these people call out their people to their constituents. And the party thing.
Right.
They don't call out the people to show interest in these kind of matters.
Right.
And, you know, say, okay, we'll pay a bus. We'll have a bus that will go into that consultation on the privatization of our water, you know, and so on, because it's very important, because water is life and so on, and we need to track it. No.
Mm-hmm.
And you find over all the constituencies, sometimes we're not even getting in double figures,
mm-hmm.
Alex.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know how frustrated that could be.
Mm-hmm.
Could be.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
It's also a cultural thing too, because if people have just not been used, if the people have been so used to the bossla, as we like to say, you know, the decisions are made by a few, and you're not asking people to make a decision. They'll be like, huh? Why are you asking me? Yeah.
There's so much is contingent on the leadership, you know, of our political directorate.
You know, it's interesting that you're saying so, because I've heard the current prime minister make that comment quite a lot, that, you know, you have to engage the MPs in the area, because sometimes the people may not even trust you.
Yeah.
Right? You come into an area... I mean, we're not as bad as Jamaica in this regard, but then sometimes you do have a level of mistrust, of distrust by the population of government agents, right? And they may not even want to give an opinion. They may not know, well, is this person, where are they coming from? You know, should I give them any information? Should I voice an opinion? Will it be held against me? You know, these types of fears exist. So, yeah, so you do have to...
All right, for example, case in point, Lucy Lake,
mm-hmm.
and the electricity supply bill. When they wanted to introduce this, you know how many years that takes for them to actually introduce that?
Well, you're saying that to introduce it, it hasn't been introduced yet, you know, caller.
Exactly. There you go.
It's still out there. But you say that, though, caller, and then
retired. I've been retired for 17 years, you know.
Yes, and it's been.
And this thing was supposed to have been done before I retired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's to show you, but nobody's pushing. And mm-hmm. even within, the one two laws you happen to pass, for example, to legislation, for the regulation of. Agencies, well, I mean, utilities or what have you.
Right.
You know, you find even though the constitution the laws require that these people account,
mm-hmm.
you know, on an annual basis, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen. For example, these people report. Are never on time.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I would think Lucilec is kind of not necessarily like.
Lucilec is above board, but I know you're trying to be general to say that.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, notwithstanding that, how thoroughly do the people understand the laws governing Lucilec and the unfair advantages that Lucilec has? Especially on how the tariffs are determined. You know what I'm saying?
Mm. Yeah, so tariff setting, of course, is and that's the heart of a lot of
Yeah, but you try and engage people,
mm-hmm.
and you even tell the political representatives they need to enforce that these things are brought before parliament. You know? And they don't enforce it, and even opposition don't say nothing because these things are not sexy. These issues, you know, people, you know, the whole political thing with about is so entangling in ad hominem politics, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, personalizing and issues that, you know, are just not substantial to our lives, but based on.
But I think we can all agree that in terms of consultation, we have a ways to go when it comes to enabling it.
We have a way to go. We need to start.
Mm-hmm. And what you find quite often, caller, I feel that we do consultation only when it is really required of us, if you get what I'm saying. So, you know, if it's a World Bank project, if it's some sort of, multilateral funding on the outside,
absolutely,
you get very detailed, you know, reports are prepared and, you know.
That's what drove us into that mode of consulting. It was a requirement by the multinationals, you know, that you have some sort of, you know, buy-in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was attempted, and nobody,
Which is why I believe that we really need some. Which is why I believe we actually do need some overall guidelines for government as to how agencies go about the process of consultation, because you know quite often you hear, we did consult, you know, and then when you ask, well, who did you speak with? And the consultation comes down to maybe one meeting that it was held when you had, and they literally just may have called in a few people. There was no broad, advertisement or anything of the sort.
I guess maybe, I don't know, we will give them more incentives in the things that really bring them together. But then we could bring them together in numbers. But that's not necessarily mean, that doesn't necessarily mean that when we get people together in numbers, them to listen.
Well,
for another purpose, to enjoy themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. No, but I think the important thing is that as a society, we need to realize that it is in fact a very important part of the process. Yeah, well, we have to try to ensure.
Yeah, but I'm not saying we don't have,
Yes, of course. It's
died anyway. Thank
yes.
You
for all right, then. Thanks very much, caller, for your input. And, of course, we are now at 2:05, so we're over time, and we're going to have to call it a day here at the Lunchroom on Radio Caribbean International. Hope you can join us again, God willing, for another program tomorrow. And I'm your host, Calix George Jr., saying goodbye.